Hi, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Monica.
And we're two fangirls who like to talk about media and knit. This is our podcast, While We Were Knitting. This month, we watched Master and Commander, an Age of Sail movie set during the Napoleonic Wars. It stars Russell Crowe as Jack Aubrey, the ship's captain, and Paul Bettany as Stephen Martin, the ship's doctor. The emotional center of the movie is the relationship between the two men and how it's tested by their different philosophical outlooks and the requirements of a ship at war. I will forever maintain that it is a deeply, deeply romantic movie. So I've seen this movie a number of times, and I believe this is Monica's first time seeing it. This month, instead of knitting, I just spun this.
So this month, I knit the Anissa pattern by Dee O'Keefe.
So this was your first time watching this, Monica. What were your initial impressions?
Well, one thing I was glad for is I was glad for the subtitles. I think I would have had a hard time with all the cant and the lingo and et cetera if it weren't for the subtitles. It was very enjoyable as a movie. I actually really, really liked it.
Oh, God.
It definitely felt like you were kind of plopped in the middle of the situation. It was definitely an in media res. And I was like, wow, there's definitely a lot of history going on here. Sure. And they're just like, well, you know what? We're just going to go with all of it. We're going to go with all of this history. It'll be fine. And it was. It was absolutely fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's based off a series of books. Not the first book. I think it might be.
It is a very long series of books, if I recall.
Yeah. There's like 19 of them. I think I read the first one or two, and then when I was like reeled into my Master Commander phase and had first watched the movie and was also reading a lot of Astolat fan fiction on the topic. And the series, actually, the books begins in the Mediterranean with Jack getting his command and Stephen joining him as the ship's doctor. So this is a couple of books in where they're like, and now we're on the Atlantic Ocean next to Brazil.
Yes, exactly. We are going to be doing all of these things. There is going to be this ship that is attacking, and you do not know why it's attacking. And at the end, you still don't know why the captain
because
has it out for them.
That's Napoleon.
Like, yeah, I know, but you're like, there were all these theories. Like, did I kill his father, or did I like disarm his, etc. No one knows. No one knows. He's just mad. And he gets away. And you're like, what? What just happened here? We're going after him. Yeah. It was the kind of thing that was built for a sequel, or it was built to be a TV series.
Sure.
But it was very enjoyable as a movie.
Did you notice with the captain of the Acheron, when Jack is going through his like captain quarters, that they had sheet music and a French horn?
I did not notice that. Yeah.
No, the point is because when Stephen and Jack are talking earlier, like, what did I do? Then Jack's like, what did I do to this man? Did I kill his son? Like, Stephen's just like, no, he's just like you. He doesn't know how to give up.
Yeah.
And that sheet music and that French horn is to draw again the similarities of they're very similar men on a different side of a war.
I also love the fact that they just sit there and they play their, like, they play their violin and their cello together.
Like they're in love.
Yeah. They turn it, they start clucking, they start strumming. I'm like, what is happening? This is amazing. And all the crew is like, what are they doing?
My favorite line in the entire movie is when I think Stephen is looking at Jack and they're getting ready to play some sort of music. And he goes, or perhaps something more aggressive. And I'm just like, oh my God. Wow. Okay.
They are very cute. I mean, the whole thing was a great opposites, but still like close.
Yeah.
Whole thing. And I can totally see why one of the mods in my server really wants an AU of it in Supernatural and is very sad that they have been unable to find one. I was like, ooh, 100% can totally see that.
Yeah. No, the funny thing about this movie is, first of all, there should be AUs in every single bed, and there aren't because suffering and the world hates me. But the other thing that's very funny is that because I think of it so much as the relationship between Stephen and Jack as the center of the movie, which I think it really is. Like, I think that's the emotional core of the movie. I have very bad understanding, despite having seen this movie probably 7 or 8 times, of the order in which other things happen. Like, at one point, I was like, oh, does the becoming and they get stranded, does that happen next? And then it was like, no, 3 other things have to happen first. And like, I've seen this movie a number of times, and I still just have very, like, I don't understand and I don't remember from time to time what order things happen in. Yeah. And like, does the storm happen first? Does the becoming happen first? Which happens?
Oh man, that becoming though. Oh, that whole thing. Like yeah. the Jonah, the Huff, like, oh man, there is so much, like, even if you're not looking for a relationship movie, there's so much like random lore that's going into this movie that you're just like immersed in the sort of culture of seafaring in that time. Sure. You know?
Yeah. It's in a lot of ways a very claustrophobic movie. Like, yes. It is set on this ship. You see people interact, come in from the outside, and, like, interact with the ship, whether it's the trading in Brazil or whether it's interacting with the whalers and the Galapagos. But the people who live on the ship never really leave except to go to the Galapagos.
Like, and there are so many people on that ship. There are so many people. They're like elbow to elbow all the time. When you see people climbing the rigging, they're side by side. And you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. 200 people on this ship and they've been out at sea for, you know, weeks or months.
Yeah.
And I think that's also part of what makes the way that this movie works so interesting to me, because it's obviously a very stressful situation that they found themselves in. I mean, there are people trying to blow them up, which is one source of stress. And then there's like the weather and being on a ship and like Jack being like, I am responsible for 200-ish people and making sure that not only are they fed and things are kept in order, but also that we are in a place where we can successfully fight against the French.
Mm-hmm.
And then how he sees the best way to do that, and that discussion with Stephen about like, what do you do with basically the Nagel? I think his name is Nagel.
Yep, Nagel. The insubordination, yeah, against the other dude whose name I can't, the guy Palm, with the weak chin whose name, yeah, I can't. Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, Palm is bad at his job. Like, he's, yes, just objectively, you're like, this person is bad at his,
yep,
job.
Yep.
And in such a position where being bad at his job could get people killed. Like, I work in an office, and so one of my coworkers is bad at their job. Like, it's annoying to me personally, but like, it is not going to like get anybody killed. Yeah. Whereas like on the ship, when, you know, the non-commissioned men look at him, they're like, this could get us killed.
Yeah. Well, they feel like this guy has gotten people killed. Yeah. They may not be wrong. Who knows? You know,
he's not good at his job. And then watching that play out because of the social pressures of all of them being trapped in this space together. And like the way that makes them treat him, which is very, very cruel. Like, you can see how he's suffering.
Mm-hmm.
You also can see like why these people are treating him that way.
Yeah.
I think it makes the series real, or not the series, the movie. I wish it was a series. I wish there were.
I do too. I wish there were a sequel. I wish it were. It really would be a great TV series.
Great TV series.
But budget, that would be a problem.
This is like a real dad movie in a lot of ways. And despite my deep love of it, my father also likes this movie. And there was an article going around like 2 years ago or something where Russell Crowe was like, wow, I wish we could make a sequel. And I was just like, God, I have been hoping for nothing but since 2004. There is no sequel, but I hope.
No, I don't think so.
The other kind of series that started earlier, and I did actually watch it, was the Horatio Hornblower series, which was, I would say, a BBC like limited series. So it's not like full 24 seasons of television, but it is a TV rather than a movie. There's a couple of seasons where it's that same sort of time period of the Napoleonic Wars and men on ships with sails that can't easily communicate with the outside. And as soon as you kind of get to the point where like things can go across the ocean really fast and like telegraphs can happen and you can communicate with people, I'm like, no, I don't care anymore. I don't care unless they're like stranded with each other only in the middle of a hostile environment.
At the very end, when they're like chasing after the Asheron, knowing that there's a hostile captain and like crew on there, and I'm like, they have no way to signal to them. They have no way to tell them that, hey, you know what? That guy who you thought was dead, not dead.
Yeah, they have the flags. I mean, you do see the flags during the calming, yeah, scene. I don't know maritime language. I don't know what the flags mean. But I was looking at that like, oh, they're doing flags. But they don't have like a real way to be like, call up like Tom Poins and be like, So some news.
Right, exactly. There's no way for them to be like, enemy aboard. I don't think there's a flag for that.
The flag language is so funny. I've never really dug into it, but it's like surprisingly complex.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's, well, the famous, the most famous flag signal from this time period was actually from Nelson. And I think the full saying is, England expects every man aboard to do his duty. And that was what they put up before the battle between the English and the French that I think ultimately killed Nelson. Although I know
a little bit about sort of that particular age, not very much. And I found like watching all of this, I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't actually care what's going on in the outside world. To me, it doesn't actually matter. What matters is these two ships are like locked in mortal combat, trying these 600 people, because they're outmanned by twice, right? The Ashron has twice the crew. These 600 people are trying to kill each other with cannons on the open water while the weather is trying to kill them too.
Yeah. Perfect description of that situation.
Oh man, though when Stephen was doing like brain surgery on the dude with he was patching his skull with a coin on the deck in the sunlight because that was the only light that they had. I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad we don't live in this age anymore. And the dude recovers.
Yeah, honestly, there's a lot of really brutal parts in this movie. There are like two parts where I'm just squeamish and I like, can't watch the TV. And I was like, watching, I was like, oh no, Monica. And then I was like, oh no, Monica's gonna be fine. Monica does not. But like the part where they do surgery on Blakely to amputate his
arm. Oh, his arm. Yeah, I know. Yeah. Blakely is my favorite. I think he's my favorite character.
And then the part where Stephen is doing surgery on himself.
On himself. That one made me flinch. I was like, oh, pulling a bullet out of yourself, making sure that the cloth attached to it is still in there with a mirror while your assistants are both shaking. Oh my God.
Oof. That's so much. That is so much.
My
favorite part about Galapagos though is they had that argument earlier about what are the requirements of the service, and Jack says, I will grind any grist the mill requires. When it comes down to it, it's like, oh, I can't sacrifice Stephen. I can't. Like, even if Ashron will get away, we will be going on board. I thought I could, but I can't.
Yeah. And Stephen's like, please tell me you didn't do this for me. Jack's like,
No comment on the entire situation. It's also a movie where the costuming is very particular, because you're like, and everybody is mostly in costumes that are naval uniforms, and just like wearing that for almost the entire series, unless they're actively working, in which case they're just kind of in like dirty clothes.
Yeah. So
I think if I were going to knit anything inspired by it, I would knit a watch cap.
So would I. I was going to say, I was going to knit a whaler's cap, like a classic whaler's cap. To celebrate their stick insect deception. I was like, I love that. I love that so much. She's like, I'm going to learn from the stick insects. And we are going to pretend to be something that is harmless.
Well, it's very fun because obviously if you're in the Galapagos doing being a naturalist, then that's a Darwin shout out. So like you're like, Stephen is basically being Darwin.
Yep.
Which is fun. He's not on a naturalist trip. He is on a trip with the Navy, and so he like can't really stop and like look at things.
But it's I also love that he's like, I can just can sail and I can walk and I'll catch up on the other side. And Jack is like, dude, I've seen you stare into a bird's nest for 2 hours. You're not gonna catch up.
He's like, oh,
like
oh,
these no, little no. bits of like familiarity. They clearly know each other real well.
I like how that the naturalist is not only used to illustrate the difference between Jack and Stephen, but it's also used to drive the larger like conflict between the two ships, like you said, with that stick insect, and also just show kind of with Blakely, like how he's trying to determine how he wants to be a person as he grows up on this ship. And like, it's like, what if I were like a fighting naturalist?
I know. It's like, just like you, Stephen. Stephen's like, I'm not that good at
that. He's like, I don't do fighting. Like, am I a fighter? Did I do some very good sword work at the end of the movie in that last fight scene? Yes. But he's not the same way. That's not what he chooses to do.
Right.
I think one of the grimmest parts of it is actually when they have to chop the sea anchor, the ship, the sail.
They have to free the mast, right?
Yes. And you're watching that guy swim towards it, and you're watching his friend be like, we have to chop him down. And I think that's a really helpful moment, because then, at least for me, it gave me a lot of sympathy towards Jack's position of like, I need to be able to give an order to these men, including help me kill effectively your friend. Help me do that and have them obey. And in a way that I think if they weren't under such extreme circumstances would be a lot more unreasonable and like Steven said, a lot more tyrannical. But you're like, I see where he's coming from.
See where he's coming from. And I think everyone else sees where he's coming from. And the fact that he doesn't just give them the order. He takes up the axe himself.
Yeah. And that's a brutal little moment in this movie.
I know he's swimming. You're like, you're so close. You're so close. Oh, shit. Yeah.
The ocean. It's a rough place.
Yeah. So I've never been on the sea with a storm that's that bad. I used to go on dive trips a lot when I was growing up. You wouldn't step foot on land for 7 days, 10 days. Mm-hmm. And being caught in a sea storm, even a small one, like those scenes where they're like throwing up in the hold, I'm like, oh yeah, I don't get seasick, but I got seasick in the hold. like you watch those scenes and you're like, I don't know how the hell those boats stayed up.
Yeah. I mean, narrative part of it, right. But like, sure. I mean, people did go through storms at sea and some of them survived, so
right. And you're like, how like, yeah.
And the feeling of the ships as physical things, I think, was really brought to light not only by the natural forces they face in the storm, but when you watch the fights with the cannon. Mm-hmm. Because again, when I was like going through it about the Napoleonic era, one of the things that's really present in the sea battles is not necessarily that the cannonballs themselves hit a lot of men and kill them. It's that the cannonballs hit the ships and generate shock.
Yeah.
And that's how people die for the most part.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, because I was looking at that. Those cannonballs, sure, if they hit someone, they're probably going to take them out. But they're not aimed in such a way that they're actually, they're aiming for the body of the ship or for the mast, which is, I was like, what? But, you know, narrative.
Yeah, I don't know how, like, exact they could get or not get. But, yeah, those battles, like, historically were very, very brutal and very, very bloody and had a lot of casualties, not only from the battle itself and the people who were killed then, but from, you know, infection, from things that went wrong in treatment afterwards.
Well, right, like when Blakely's like, I have a broken arm, and my immediate thought was, oh, poor kid, oh, no big deal. Sure. Oh, no, big deal, very big deal.
Big deal, real big deal. And when you're looking at the toll from the final battle, like, the movie is like, oh, we will be killing people you know and care about. We will be killing this small boy that you know and care about.
I know. I was like, no. Oh, no, yes.
Because they go for it. They're like, and here's like 9 people whose face you actually recognize.
The whole thing about like being sewn up in your hammock, and Blakely specifically doesn't want, you know, his nose sewn up into his hammock if he dies. He is so aware of death that he is like planning for his own eventuality. This like small child, and this is just life for them.
Yeah,
it's brutal. Like the fact that Jack calls it for me, the most memorable moment of the movie, which is probably memorable to me and no one else, when we first see Steven and Jack comes down and he's like, so what's the butcher's bill?
Yeah.
And that's what he calls the death toll.
It's pretty rough.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I did mention to you last time we talked about this movie on the podcast is there are no women with speaking parts in this movie.
You're right. There are barely any women, period. There's one who like waves and smiles pretty much.
Yep. And that's pretty much it. I feel like if I were to describe like, so this movie has no women, you'd be like, and you still like it? I'm like, yeah, I actually love this movie. But it's very insular to a specific time, a specific place, and a specific group of people on the ship. And it's not
a reflection of a culture.
Yes. It's a reflection of naval culture, English, especially English naval culture, circa 1805, mm-hmm. which is very specific.
Yeah. Anywhere else, it wouldn't work.
No. It's very specific. There are things that you're like, okay, this is just like something that like everybody's trapped on this ship together and they're just trying to like deal with it. Like whenever they're doing dinner together at the captain's quarters and like everyone just gets drunk out of their mind.
Or that moment when Steven is like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't be getting the crew drunk mm-hmm. like all the time. Maybe we should be tossing the grog over the side. And Steven is like, oh no, yeah. We are not doing that. But yeah, they get plastered at those dinners.
Yeah, they get super drunk. And then the crew also is getting grog, which is mm-hmm. obviously less fancy and less nice. But like everybody is just drunk for a lot of the movie. And they don't think they, besides that back and forth between Stephen and Jack, where Stephen's like, maybe if people were less drunk, we would have like not have these issues. And Jack was like, we would have different issues. We would have a mutiny.
Yeah, right.
But it also does lend itself to some very funny lines, like the lesser of two weevils.
That is probably my favorite. That whole sequence, I think, is probably my favorite in the movie. I'm like, oh my God, terrible dad jokes in the middle of the ocean.
Yep. Ah, there I have you, Doctor. In the service, you always must choose the lesser of two weevils.
Because it's not a funny movie, you know, altogether. It's altogether, if you look at it pretty objectively, it's fairly grim.
Sure.
Because of that, the contrast of those moments made mm-hmm. me laugh so hard.
When Jack eats the Galapagos and the Acheron, mm-hmm. you're just like, oh, Jack.
Yeah.
I think Killick is the only humorous relief in really the entire movie. The steward, I don't know what his official position is, but the guy who's like in charge of taking care of Jack and who's like very grumbly and it's like, they're playing this music again and it's never anything with a beat. It's not something.
Yeah. Nothing you can dance to.
It's a great soundtrack though. Sometimes I will just put the soundtrack on and like listen to the soundtrack while I do other things. And I'm always like, this is just a fantastic soundtrack.
The contrast of the sort of orchestral style, like string mm-hmm. music that these guys are producing to the environment around them is very, very, like, it's really fascinating. Because they could have definitely gone a very different way with sort of the environment. They're so clearly trying to make this like tiny spot of like pleasure and refinement. Like when they have their dinners, they have them on plates and they're all dressed up, mm-hmm. you know, just the maintenance of a cultured existence in the middle of what is very much not.
Yeah. And then you have the crew who's also singing like jigs and songs and mm-hmm. stuff, as well as to make their own music, which is mm-hmm. like different, but no less joyful or important mm-hmm. than the music that Stephen and Jack make together. Yes. And by music they make together, I do mean boning. Can you see it on screen? No, but I feel it in my heart. I feel it in my heart.
I mean, let's be honest, they are in fact a bunch of sailors all stuck to like a bunch of dudes all stuck together for a very long time on a boat. Yes.
Yeah. The famous saying about the English Navy was rum, sodomy, and the lash. So
okay.
So I'm so glad that you enjoyed it, even though, you know, there's definitely some very heavy moments in the movie and there's obviously some stuff that you're like, oh gosh. I'm very glad to hear that you enjoyed it. But how was the combo of the thing you were knitting as well as the movie?
So the Anissa pattern is a fairly straightforward pattern. It's two strips of lace with a cable in between and then the mm-hmm. rest of it is, and like flanking pearls, and then the rest of it is garter. So altogether, I expected that it was going to be a pretty good match because the cable is a fairly simple one. So I didn't miscross my cables or anything, but there were definitely times where I would look down and be like, oh yeah, I was supposed to do lace a couple of rows ago because I was so involved that I just kept going with the garter stitch. Yeah. It's a very involving movie. Like I didn't want to look away.
Yeah. And that's so interesting for something that's in a lot of ways, a very like just visually a dark movie. Like the colors are just very subdued and it's mostly a lot of blues, a lot of grays, a lot of neutrals with the Marines as being like one of the few bright spots. And when we anchor off Brazil and are interacting with the Brazilians who are in the boats and like more colorful and wearing clothes that are not naval uniforms or clothes they've been wearing for 3 months straight, It is very subdued in its telling.
It is visually a dark movie, but it the story they spin and like the relationships they... Now, I confess the part of the reason I had to pay a lot of attention is because I had a really hard time telling any of the characters apart in the beginning. I'm like, y'all are all sort of like dirty looking white dudes with strong British accents talking in nearly incomprehensible language to me. But then you get familiar with them and then you want to see what's going to happen to these guys, you know?
Did you clock that Billy Boyd is in this movie?
Yes.
Okay.
There were a bunch of people who I recognized, but I don't remember any actors' names. I never do, but I was like, wait, I know you. You are a hobbit. And then, I know you, dude. You are in Glee. Yeah.
And it was so funny because I was trying to remember what I had seen Blakely in, because I'm like, I know I've seen this child in something that's not this. Mm-hmm. And he was Octavian Augustus in Rome in the first series until they had to age him up. And I was like, oh, that's why I'm clocking you again. Because I think I saw him in this first, because I didn't see Rome until a couple of years later. Yeah. But I was like, I know I've seen him in something, not this movie. But he has, like, it's very funny. He's been in, like, four things ever. And one of them is this, and the other one is Rome.
He was excellent, that kid. He really was.
Did a good job. And then for me, it was a good combo because obviously spinning is a little more like you kind of set it, at least for the spinning I was doing in this one, just as a straight spin, kind of keep going. So I could like pay attention to the subtitles, like you said, because they do use a lot of like nautical language as well. Yeah. The visuals of like the ship and sea and all that's going on.
It was fascinating, though. I loved the nautical language. I really did. I loved how deep they went into this whole thing.
Yeah. When they're sitting at dinner and they turn the horn and everyone starts cheering and Stephen's like, I, the audience substitute, would love to know what just happened here.
Yeah.
And it's clear that Jack has explained this like 20 times and Stephen has absorbed it like zero of those times.
Yes.
Two men in love on boats.
Yes. Yes. Very entertaining. I would watch it again. Yeah.
Good. I'm so glad. I mean, you can also just read the Temporary series and be like, oh, I see exactly how this came to be.
That is true. I also very much enjoy the Temporary series, so fair enough.
Well, it began its life as Master and Commander fanfic, and I think she said publicly a couple of times, she was like, yeah, I thought I was writing fanfic, and then I realized after a while that this actually was not fan fiction anymore. This was like its own thing. But you're like, oh, I understand where this came from once you have that knowledge.
Yes. I do kind of want to go read it again now because it's been a long time.
Well, I have all the books if you want to borrow them. It's definitely a fun ride. Next month, we will be doing part two of our Age of Sail, Men in Love on Ships duology, which actually will be a TV series, but we're going to be watching Our Flag Means Death, which I think is going to be a blast because pretty much everybody I know who watched it really enjoyed it. We will see you all next month. Not see you. Hear you. Listen to you. Anyways, next month, Our Flag Means Death. Bye.
Bye.